Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, November 5th, 2017. The share ID numbers for Friday, November 3rd, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, share ID 102620. That's 10,620. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 10621. That's 10,621. This morning, A Vision for You presents A Changed Outlook. The Big Book teaches on page 143 that to get over drinking will require a transformation of thought and attitude. The 12 steps, as outlined in the Big Book, represent a process of spiritual awakening, a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. For us, of course, this means recovery from compulsive overeating. The obsession of the mind will be driven out as a result of these 12 steps. The real advantage of these steps is that they are a specific, proven method for producing a transformation, a change in the way we think, feel, and behave. The 12 steps, when worked sequentially, create a powerful personal transformation. This transformation creates a new attitude and experience toward ourselves, toward others, and towards God. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of our lives, are cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions, ideas, and attitudes begin to dominate us. The results are disproportionate to our efforts. We are rocketed into a fourth dimension beyond the physical, into a spiritual way of life, and a new world comes into view. Joining us this morning are four recovered compulsive overeaters who will share their experience and results with the 12-step process. Our first panelist, Katie G. from Massachusetts. Welcome to the line, Katie. Good morning.
Sorry, Leah. Good morning.
Right,
I think I can
eager.
Be heard.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
What a surprise. Katie G. is eager. All right, I'll start my timer. Katie G., recovered compulsive overeater, anorexic, and bulimic. And just want to say what an honor it is to be asked to speak and share with my fellow brothers and sisters, and was totally excited to hear about this topic. For me, you know, one of my first sponsors in the fourth step when we were doing the work, she said to me, you know, if you continue to think that way, eating is going to be a step up from your thinking. And when I was brought this topic, what's the first kind of old idea I had? Well, from a little girl, I was uncomfortable in my own skin, and I looked around me and I thought, if I had what you had, you know, a family, a functional family, big boobs, a boyfriend, a husband, you know, and that went through my life, I wouldn't feel the way I feel. And that lie was based on fears that I'm not good enough. You know, I've heard it described that I'm like a restless dog. You know, I'm circling my tail and trying to find a place to sit. I just felt fundamentally I'm not going to get what I need. I'm not going to get what I deserve. Right. And I thought that I didn't know I had a spiritual sickness, but I thought that the solution to my spiritual problem, which is the restless, irritable, and discontented, is external things. And I also felt that life owed me, that I deserve to be comfortable all the time. And this mishigosh of, if I had what you had, I wouldn't feel the way I feel, so I'm not good enough, and I need to fight what I need for what I need and what I deserve, right? Because I knew what I deserved, set me up for a life of resentment, fear, and sex and relationship issues that kept me going back to the food over and over and over again. And until I had a psychic change, it was awful. And I do want to preface this again by saying, I'm recovered, but I can still see that lie pop up. It's just not dominating me the way it used to. So just really quick. So my life was based on this fear, right, that, you know, you guys have something that I need and that external things are going to bring me peace. So how did I act? Well, I was an actor, forever trying to arrange the lights, the scenery, and the ballet. I was a boss. All my friends, I would tell them what to do. I know that's really surprising, and I hated people. I hated my father. I hated my mom. I hated girls who were thin and popular. I hated girls who got their period, people who had happy families, everything external, because I thought if I could just get everything in a row, then I would be okay. And then I was surprised when people didn't want to be my friend or took a step back from me, even though inside I'm filled with jealousy and envy, and I believe that I was treating people well, right? And so because the feelings would get so strong, I would use starving and binging and purging to try and mold myself into someone who deserved this stuff, that would give me the stuff that would let me be okay to be me. And I didn't have a lot of skills. At work, you know, I graduated from college and I went into my first boss and I said, within the first month, I said, what do I need to do to get promoted? Like, forget, you know, showing up to work on time. What do I need to be doing to get promoted? So I was driven by fear, driven, driven, driven. And my relationships with other people, I looked for hostages. And my life really crashed and burned with addiction. And I got into program, but I still believed if I could be thin, if I could get the husband, if I could get, you know, if I could get the family, I would feel better about myself. And so I got into program and I thought, okay, well, I'm a single woman, so I need to get a job that pays me enough money, right? Because I need to get enough money so I can earn enough, like all of this self, right? All of this fear and this self. And I, guess what? I got fired from the same job in 4 different times because I'm a controller. And so I was asked to be a manager for other people and they would report to me. And I would be like, you're thin? No, like you can't go home yet. I mean, I wouldn't say this, right? But this is my attitude. And I guess if I were to really describe my attitude that came to me in the 4th step and the 5th step that I saw is that I had this judging mind. And from the time I was a little kid, you were either better than me, so I needed to get you to move inside my body and make me feel better and make me be you so I'm okay, or you were worse than me, so I needed to dump on you and hold you hostage and come inside my body so I feel okay, right? Like that's how I knew. I didn't know how to look at us as God's kids. So, and I also wanted to be in intimate relations because God gave me this heart's desire to be a wife, to be a mom, and I didn't know how. As a sponsor, I was in a part of a program that you could, you know, talk about, be a little bit more, a lot more impactful around food and body weight. And I shared this at another meeting, and I hope you hear it that I don't do this anymore, but there was a young woman and she was blonde and thin and had big boobs and a boyfriend. And I was like, she has everything I want. I mean, and so she needs to be heavier than me so I feel safe and secure. And needless to say, none of this, the job that I got fired from 4 different times, the sponsoring, none of it helps me to arrive in my own skin, right? So this lie, if I had what you had, I wouldn't feel the way I feel, caused all of this, you know, devastation, and it caused devastation within program. I couldn't be happy for other people. I couldn't be near you if you had something that I wanted. And so my life was burning down, and I got to steps 4 and 5. And I have to tell you that the work of step 4 and 5 brought me from living above my body, and I started to settle into my own skin. And I saw that I hated everyone who I thought was better than me because they got the stuff that I thought would change me, right? And again, I thought stuff would cure my spiritual illness. And I saw the exact nature of my personality, of the judging that I talked about. And I saw how much I hated my parents. But here's the thing about my parents, right? Like my mom, guess what? She didn't do the greatest job. You know, she wasn't whoever, Donna Reed. But if I looked at who she was compared to her mother, it is astonishing that my mother was physically present, right? So my victimhood started to go away, and I started to see like everyone is God's kids. Another place that I, started to arrive in my own skin and my ideas, emotions, and attitudes started to change was, so I had this cousin, right? And she was beautiful. She got married. She got married to a New York Times bestseller book guy, right? Like, oh my goodness. And then she got tenure at a college. Oh my gosh. So I went to make an amend to her because I had treated her horribly. I had gone to her house and taken her stuff and just dumped on her a lot. And the day I went to make an amend to her was the day that she was leaving her alcoholic husband. And so things, my old ideas started to crash down around me as I realized your external circumstances, it's like the prosaic steel girder, right? Like, those external circumstances, my ideas about who you are, don't, like, I can't compare my insides to your outsides. Like, it's a lie. And my sponsor had to say to me, Katie, the lie is, if I had what you had, I wouldn't feel the way I feel. And I cognitively did not understand that without her explaining it to me maybe 100 times and me writing it down 200 times. I'm not kidding. So resentments, I started to get free and see that I was the one creating the block. The fears, I saw that every fear I had ever made was based on, or every decision I'd ever made was based on fear. Like I had to prove to the world that I was good enough, that I should be promoted in jobs. I never tried for graduate school because I was like, well, I can't fail. I thought I was going to be abandoned, so I held hostages in relationships. Like, I have to get you to be in a relationship with me because I need the stuff, because I need to be okay in my own skin. And it was devastating. And that was amazing, right, to be emotionally devastated, because from there I can grow, I can break open. And with sex relations, it was like, all these people that I used, right? Like, I just wanted you to give me something so I was okay. And what started to shift for me is, not only did I arrive in my skin, but it started to be okay for me to be uncomfortable in my skin, right? For me to realize that, like, this isn't Get Comfortable Anonymous, right? This is Overeaters Anonymous, and life is about moving through it. And sometimes I'm gonna have fear. And sometimes I'm not going to feel good all the time. And I started praying for the people and feeling joyful for the women who got married, who got engaged, who had babies. I mean, these were like core things that I thought, I can't be near them because that is too devastating for me. How selfish is that? Like, I'm not going to be happy for you because I'm not getting my stuff. So things really started to shift in steps 4 and 5 as a woman looked at me and she knew all my darkness. And, and life started to shift me. Like, I spent my whole life, thinking if I could just get married, I'm going to be okay. And I'll be honest, the day after my marriage, it was a hard day spiritually. It was just as hard of a day for me as the darkest days as when I was thin and, or excuse me, when I was single and thinking I'm just going to be okay once I get married. And it was because my work doesn't end with God, right? Like, I need a spiritual solution to fill me up and make me okay. And that's all that's going to make me okay. So my beliefs had to be pulverized. And I can continue to feel darkness around, if people have these things, but they don't dominate. And it has truly, truly changed. And I know that stuff doesn't make me happy, that stuff doesn't come into my life and all of a sudden cure me. I know that A, I'm a compulsive overeater and I cannot manage my own life, and B, that no human power, and C, that God can if he's sought. And so what I wanted to leave you guys with today is that, yes, I'm recovered and I am not dominated by these lies and fears anymore. However, I still need to seek God with the desperation of a drowning woman, because, my step 10s can sound like looking for human powers to fill me, right? But what really has happened to me as the result of working the steps and staying actively engaged with all of you is, I don't need to quit playing God. I do need to quit playing God. In fact, I need to quit playing God. And when I let go of the results, and I show up, right, and I stop being so worried, where's my stuff, and there are only finite resources, and I've got to go after it, when I let go and hold my hands open to God, right? Like I have a new employer. God provides what I need if I keep close to Him, right? More and more I become interested in seeing, what can I give to life? Not what are you guys giving to me? Not when am I going to get the friend or the marriage or the baby? Like all of that stuff just adds more stuff to my life. And it is amazing. Like I'm not going to say there is a day that I ever have regretted, and it's not been very long, but that I'm married. I don't regret that. But I know that what has marriage done for me? It's called me closer to God. It's called me closer to this program. It's called me closer to all of you. And being a recovered woman today means that when I have these fears, when I'm resentful, it's because I'm telling myself lies, and I can start to believe in these new varieties of lies. But today I learned that like being in my body again, it means accepting that I'm going to feel uncomfortable, but it doesn't mean I need to lash out at you. It doesn't mean that anything externally is going to make me feel better. And one of my favorite prayers that my sponsor taught me is that God is sending me who I need, what I need, when I need, for as long as I need it. And that is my mantra today. It's not, you know, how am I going to get my stuff? It's that God is in charge, and that stuff is just stuff, and it's going to come and go and ebb and flow. And I'm not driven by the resentments and the fears and the relationship misconduct that just brings so much misery. And I'll just close with this. Like, there's nothing more joyous than having death of self for successful living. And what that means for me today is that when you call me and give me good news, I'm psyched. One of my sponsors said to me, she said, if someone else gets married, that means you can get married. If someone else is a mom, that means you can be a mom. Like, but again, it's letting go of the outcome and remembering that, you know, page 100, we realize that the things that came to us when I put myself in God's hands, not Katie G's hands, but God's hands, are better than anything I could have planned. Follow the dictates of my higher power, and I will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. So it's a huge topic to cover in 15 minutes, and I hope I have done it justice. It is an honor and privilege to be with you today. And to continue walking this walk shoulder to shoulder one day at a time. And with that, I pass.
Thank you very much, Katie G., for sharing your experience with us. Second panelist this morning, Craig F. from Oklahoma. Craig, star one to unmute.
This is Craig F., recovered in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm sorry, I'm a little slow this morning on the draw. I'm going to start by apologizing if I break into a coughing fit. I'm fighting a cold and a sore throat this morning, and I hope that that doesn't get in the way of sharing what I need to share. This topic is great for me. It's good for me, and it forced me to inventory and acknowledge my growth and changes and not take them for granted. You know, I heard somebody say one time recently that they do their gratitude list with the idea that whatever they don't put on their gratitude list, they're going to lose tomorrow. And, I think it's important to be grateful for the changes that we have. I also think that it's necessary that I acknowledge that any changes that I've experienced are not my accomplishments. They're gifts, they're miracles of the program. It's also necessary to say that, and I don't want to give the impression that I've been transformed to some state of perfection, or that bluebirds and butterflies circle my head and unicorns run around in my yard with constant rainbows overhead. We claim spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. In other words, I'm better than I was, but I'm not as good as I may hopefully grow to be. From the Ninth Step Promises on page 84, it says our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. And I, and I, I took that to be the topic today, that as I understood it, I had to choose between several personality changes that I see in myself today and focus on an example, one example for this talk. And that was good for me too, to look at that and to look at the different ways that that I've been transformed and been changed. So the attitude and outlook I chose to talk about, I described as accepting that I'm just a flawed human being, another bozo on the bus. In other words, accepting my humanity. In my perfectionism and in the grip of the disease, I swing back and forth between seeing myself as better than I am and worse than I am, focusing either on my accomplishments or on my failures and defects. I feared and focused on a scripture that says, to whom much is given, much will be expected, and knew that I would come up way short of what I could have or should have been. This overwhelming sense of guilt did something to me, and it does something for me. What it did to me was that it stood in the way of my contact with God. The guilt got in the way. But what it did for me was it allowed me to continue in my behavior, because I might as well continue if I was irredeemably broken. So we come to the steps. I came in 27 years ago, and I made passing attempts at the steps, always holding back and never being completely honest. I wanted to continue in certain behaviors, and I tried to bargain with God. When I ended up in the hospital a year ago, I finally knew that I was defeated, that half measures had gotten me nowhere. You know, I had come in this program at 410 pounds. I'd gotten down to 260, and at my, you know, I'm 6'4", and, 260 is not too bad of a weight. I probably could have taken another 20 off, but, it was pretty close to where I played basketball. And in my relapse, I ended up at one point at 520 pounds. And I had gotten lymphedema in my legs, and the lymphedema got infected, and I ended up in the hospital for 3 weeks with a doctor telling me that I was about to die. And I cried out. I knew that I'd eaten myself pretty much to death, and I knew where the solution was. I'd seen the solution work in me and others, and that was a spiritual awakening. It was an amyl nitrate capsule in my nose. It woke me up. I got a sponsor, and I worked the steps as completely and honestly as I know how, as I could, as honestly as I'm capable of being with myself, and that grows with time. In step four, I inventoried my grosser defects. I saw that there was a limit, that the defects were so big and no bigger and no smaller. I admitted those things to God, myself, and another human being. The world didn't end and the guillotine didn't fall. I admitted those things that I didn't want to admit to, and it wasn't the end. As a matter of fact, it was a freeing experience. As I sat there and did that, I sat in the same chair that I'm in right now with my preacher that I gave my fifth step to, sitting in a chair next to me, and admitted to him things that you just don't admit in church, you know. And the world didn't end, and he still loved me, and we're still friends, I'm still a human being. In six and seven, I boiled these things down to my character defects, and I asked God to remove them, and we moved on. And in eight and nine, I cleaned up my side of the street as best I could. And, I made those amends. I wrote those letters. I paid that money. I did the things that I was supposed to do. And every time I did that, a burden was lifted from me. I felt less ashamed, less less than, less minimized, and I began to see that my relationship with God was improving. That I began to feel God's presence, and forgiveness and His grace, and I would tell my sponsor these things, and he would about what I was doing or what I was feeling, and he would say, "They have a name for people like you. It's called human being." And I began to see myself as just another bozo on the bus, as just a human being. It was exhausting, that process of trying to hold up a mask to the world and walking with a foot on both sides of a canyon. Presenting an image that I knew wasn't true, and remembering or trying to remember the stories and lies that I told or was supposed to tell. I had to eat to carry that much guilt and anxiety. Today, I don't have to live like that. Today, I know that God has all of me, the good, the bad, that He can use all of it. With sponsees, I can share where I've been, what happened, and what it's like now. And I get to claim another nine-step promise that says that no matter how far down the scale I've gone, or in this case, up the scale, my experience can help others. Also, I can claim the fifth step promise on page 75 that says, once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone and at perfect peace and ease, and our fears will fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. To me, that's one of the most delightful promises in the book. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. And that promise I can claim today. I feel like I'm on the broad highway and that I'm walking hand in hand with my Creator, with the Spirit of the universe, God, whatever name you want to use. And I'm not saying I don't stumble, and I'm not saying I do that perfectly. I'm saying that I have a partner in that, and that partner and those fellows around me, we're moving the right direction. You know, I'm moving towards the right way, and imperfectly walking that path. I want to talk a little bit about the difference that I kind of illuminated here, and I want to illuminate it a little bit, and that's the difference between a spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience, and enlarging my spiritual life. Sometimes those terms get used interchangeably, and I've come to understand that it's, for me, it's important to remember that I had a spiritual awakening when I came in this program. Early on, you know, like I said, an amyl nitrate popped in my, you know, the stuff they give somebody that's had a concussion that wakes them up, popped under my nose. I woke up, you know, and that was an awakening. You know, I had a spiritual experience as I began to give away my inventory and I began to make amends. And that spiritual experience was that feeling of that nearness of my Creator, the feeling that I was walking hand in hand with God, and that was inspirational, and it was great. And then the third thing is I enlarged my spiritual life, and that's another topic because it goes beyond the scope of what we're talking about today. But that enlarging my spiritual life is what happens in the growth steps in 10, 11, and 12. Bill says it comes from self-sacrifice and working with others. So there's three things, but today we're talking about the spiritual awakening and the spiritual experience and the change in the personality. My prayer life began to open up. I began to feel God's presence and forgiveness and grace. I'm sorry, I'm back on the... I shuffled my cards. How embarrassing. I made a mistake. Anyway, ego. Ego is defined to me. You know, First of all, the steps were defined to me as an ego-reducing process. And ego was defined to me as not that I think about, that I think too little of myself or that I think too much of myself, but that I think about myself too much. So the biggest personality change that I've seen in myself is that I simply think about myself less. You know, it's not just about the food, of course. It's about the food till it's not about the food. But, it's not just that I don't think about food as much. It's that I don't think about me as much. I don't think about my shame and my guilt. I don't think about my security, my petty desires as much. I'm not wrapped up in my own comfort as much. Today, I spend a lot of my time on the phone with fellow travelers in this program. I sponsor a lot of guys. I spend most of my evenings on the phone with them, and it's the most rewarding experience of my life to get to share in their lives. They do me so much more good than I could probably ever do them, because not only in them do I see myself, but in them, when I talk to them about something that happened to me, I'm able to see more clearly my own experiences, my own growth, my own need for God, and you see that is. To me, that is the essence of the change that I had from working the steps, that I'm not consumed as much with myself anymore, that I am consumed less and less about my petty desires and my petty goals, but that and my guilt, and that I'm not sitting here scheming against the world, and that I'm out of myself. I'm out of my selfishness, and as that's a fact that grows in my life all the time, and it leads me to a place. You know, again, it's not unicorns and rainbows and butterflies and bluebirds. But it is a wonderful place to live. It's such a better place to live than in the hell of my own ambitions and pettiness. And I think that's just about 15 minutes, if it is. And I think I've done my damage, and with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Craig F., for sharing your experience this morning. Let's welcome panelist number 3, Leslie W. from Tennessee.
Thank you, Leia. Can you hear me okay, Leia?
I hear you well.
Thank you. I'm just getting over a respiratory bug, so my voice is a little bit shaky. But God's power is made perfect in my weakness. So here we go. So today I'm going to focus on one specific area of my life where old ideas, emotions, and attitudes used to dominate me. And I'm going to tell about how this 12-step process rearranged me in that area of my life so that new ideas, emotions, and attitudes could take place. In the big book on page 27, it says, "Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding force of our lives, of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them." And that is exactly what has happened to me and continues to happen to me in different areas of my life, in different layers, in different phases. But I'm going to focus on one specific area, and that area is with my children. And that old idea that used to dominate me consisted of believing that bad things happen to my children as a direct result of me, that God is punishing me. and that also those bad things are a reason for me to pick up. The false belief that I am a bad mother because bad things happen to my children under my watch. I am the one to blame and have somehow fallen prey to the belief that I caused these things to happen or could have somehow prevented it. And you see that there how I'm giving myself a lot of power. so I'm just going to jump right into it. I have two boys. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I have two boys ages 8 and 3. And when my youngest was 17 months old, he was sitting coloring a picture at our kitchen table, and I was standing right there with him, and I had him buckled into his booster seat at the table. And I turned to pick up something on the stove, and when I did, somehow he had put his feet on, wedged his feet between the chair and the table, and pushed back, and when he did, the chair flipped back, and he hit his head on the tile floor. And he cried, but I really didn't think that he was severely injured until the next day when I could literally push my fingers into the side of his skull. So I rushed him to Children's Hospital, and they took x-rays. This was in the fall of 2015. And they told me that he had a skull fracture. During this time, I found vision. I was in the midst of repeating the step work with my current sponsor as I had relapsed a few months after this second baby was born. And I was working back towards step 9 at this point and beginning to make amends to my husband when all of this happened. My fear completely took over. I began lashing out, dumping my emotions out on him, my husband, neglecting his needs and magnifying mine, repeating old patterns and behaviors. And my marriage began to fall apart again. This is not the first time it happened. But this time I could tell that he really meant business. I had to do something drastic because I didn't want to lose my marriage and I didn't want to go back to the misery of compulsively overeating. So I did the only thing that I knew to do, which was throw myself into this program, my program work, and I began to ask God to help me. I began to ask God to help me stop fighting, and for me that was drastic. And before this, it's important to note that I was very lackadaisical about my step work. you know, very lackadaisical about it. But it was also this time, see, all these events are working together for a reason, and I can see that now. It was also this time that I heard the good news of hope that one can become recovered on this Vision for You phone meeting. I'd never heard that before in the 5 years of going to face-to-face meetings. What it did was it gave me an attainable goal and something tangible to work towards, and it gave me hope, which I so desperately needed at that time in order to obtain the willingness. It was also during this time going back and forth to pediatric neurologists. And during the treatment for his head injury, the pediatric neurologist found a sacral dimple on the baby's lower back, which can be indicative of something called tethered cord syndrome, spinal cord syndrome, where the tissues attached to the spine and the limits of the movement, limits the movement of the lower body that can lead to irreversible neurological and motor impairments later in life. So there, we had more tests and more MRIs and months of waiting to find out what was going to happen. What was the damage that we didn't know? You know, there was no way to know. So we waited. And it was at this time where I came to a crossroads in my faith. I came to a crossroads in my program. And I had to believe. I had to basically poop or get off the pot, you know? Do I believe that God is a good God and that he will take care of me and my children, or don't I? And I'm going to reference page 53 in how agnostics, in we agnostics, which says, when we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis that we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? Arrived at this point, we were squarely confronted with the question of faith, and we couldn't duck the issue. For me, there was no more hiding. There was no more ducking the issue. I had to make a decision. And for me, God either is or isn't. I'm either going to trust him to take care of me and take care of my child and my children, or I'm not. And I knew that if I could trust God with my child, that everything else would follow, because see, for me, that was my biggest and worst fear, something happening to my child. And you see, my God doesn't really tolerate anything before him. He doesn't tolerate anything, any other gods before him, not even my children, not the food, not my husband, not my children. So if my children or my husband or my parents or anyone else becomes my God, then inevitably I know that I will be crushed by that self-imposed crisis. I know that inevitably I will be faced with that decision to either release those people into God's care and keep fighting to desperately hold on. And those are my only two choices, just like with the food. Those are the only two doors. So thankfully, that MRI came back negative. Thankfully, the type of head injury that my son sustained was the best type that you want to sustain. It was what's called a linear skull fracture, which does in fact heal on its own over time. Fast forward, God's providence, fast forward to February of 2017. This year, my son was diagnosed with sensory processing disorder and a speech disorder. But because of the fearless and searching inventory that I completed regarding my son and this other incident that I went through, the truth had been revealed to me prior that these are really my own defects of character coming out, fear, pride, ego in reverse, which is mentioned in the AA 12 and 12 on page 45. So as soon as I felt that, I knew that the action which needed to be taken was to face it head on. So I dove into evaluations. I contacted the proper people that I was supposed to contact. I went to the meetings. I did the paperwork. We're doing the therapy. We did the doctor's appointments. I still felt fear throughout that process. But because of the work through the steps, I knew what I had to do, right? I followed the instructions. I relied upon my fellows. I relied upon doing regular 10 steps and constant service to relieve that fear. Because for me, the only way to relieve it is to take action. I have to take action. I cannot sit in those feelings, or they will consume me and I will eat. So I practiced 10, 11, and 12 daily as I was going through this next trial with my son, and have now begun to see the benefits and the improvement that he has made throughout this process. His progress has astounded me. The wonderful team of therapists, teachers, and doctors that have been and continue to be available to me were all sent by God. God gave me everything I need, and he continues to give me everything I need. The new idea is that bad things will happen sometimes, but it's not because God is punishing me, because that's not who God is. My God is a loving God. The new belief that has taken its place is that I am a good mother who does the very best she can. I don't have enough power to prevent all those bad things from happening. I place my children in God's hands today, and I enjoy every day with them to the best of my ability. To conclude, I have learned that I do not control my children's destiny. I am their caretaker, not their creator. they ultimately belong to God and not to me. And I am privileged and blessed to be given the responsibility of being their mother. Good things and bad things happen, but God takes care of them, and God takes care of me each and every day here on this earth. I thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to give this service today. And I know that's not quite 15 minutes, but really, that's all that I needed to say this morning. And I thank you, Leah.
Thank you, Leslie W., for sharing your personal insights and experience with all of us this morning. And panelist number four, Naomi B. from Pennsylvania. Welcome, Naomi.
Thank you, Leah. Good morning. Good morning, my Vision family. This is Naomi B., a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater outside Philadelphia. No words could tell the loneliness and despair I found in the bitter morass of self-pity. My old ways of thinking were very selfish, self-centered, dishonest, resentful, and fearful. I was driven by getting my food fixed at any cost. One of those costs meant leaving my baby girl in a crib alone in the middle of the night so I could go out to the convenience store and pick up some ice cream. That was crazy. Who does those kind of things? Well, I did, because I was driven by my disease. Another thing that stands out in my life is for about 25 years, I had my own daycare business here in my home, and I was so consumed with carbs that while the children would sleep in the afternoon, I too would fall asleep. I was physically unable to do anything other than that. On Wednesday nights, I have a second job, and I got it in my head not to eat dinner. So I would sit there, and for all appearances, I had a math book in front of me if I wasn't working with a student. The actuality of this was my brain was having food ping pong. Was I to leave the class afterwards and go to the convenience store to buy an Italian hoagie or a turkey hoagie from 6:30 until 8:30? And then I felt entitled because I had worked all day in my business, and then I worked at night. That's a 14-hour day. And I had that entitlement because my brain, as a chronic alcoholic, yes, I would seek out the ease and comfort of the food, which lasted for about 5 seconds, and then the self-hatred came into my being. I truly had the obsession of the mind and the allergy of the body. And when ingested these foods, I was off to the races. My disease engulfed me and everyone else around me. My family suffered. Everyone suffered. My poor children, my two little daughters, well, they're grown now, but at the time, they suffered too because physically I wasn't able to do things with them because of my size and my limitations. Until I had a spiritual awakening in the nature of a huge emotional displacement and rearrangement, I would not be free. This resonates for me in Bill's story. How dark is it before the dawn? I was soon to be catapulted into the fourth dimension of existence. I would know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that was incredibly more wonderful as time passes. My life as an ex-problem compulsive overeater depends upon my constant thought of others. I must depend on the infinite God rather than finite self. My mindset, my tolerance, I mean, everything changed about me. Love and tolerance of others became my code. I was truly, at the time prior to that, driven by self-will. This is what happened in my life. I know I am no longer running the show. I now have a director. I am the student. He is the teacher. This has taken so much pressure off me because I don't have to tell people what to do. And I did, and I did it very well because I knew best. I knew best. Well, and God does not make hard of terms and those who seek him. And then the steps, these wonderful, wonderful steps. Oh, my gosh. The fourth and fifth step, putting out of my mind the wrongs others had done to me. I resolutely turned and looked at my mistakes. Where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Where was I to blame? I've been trying to get a new attitude and new relationship with those around me and my Creator. I must be entirely honest with somebody if I expect to be happy and live long. I must be hard on myself and considerate of others. 6 and 7, I'm so ready to let God remove all these defects in my character, asking God, how can I best serve you? And 8 and 9, going back over the list from 4 and 5, who I'd harmed, and attempting to sweep away the debris of my life. Disregarding what others had done to me, my real purpose is to fit myself into maximum service to God and those around me. And then with doing steps 4 through 9 daily, I am doing my 10th step. For faith in a power greater than myself was a miraculous demonstration of that power in human lives and facts as old as man himself. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the governing force of my life, was suddenly cast aside. Life does not stop because I have neutrality around the food. Only staying close to God and working the steps daily was I to see a change in my life. I recovered, not cured, from a hopeless condition of mind and body, having God match calamity with serenity. As one of our fellows always says on this line, and I love it and I live it, I will never rise above the level of being human. What I'd like to focus on today was my husband. My husband has been the best in my life for working my program, and God has allowed me to go through all these instances I'm going to talk about without picking up the food. On May 1st, 2014, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, I received a phone call to tell me that my husband collapsed at work and he was taken to the ER. I had my lunch in my hands. I instantly put it down and flew out and drove over to the hospital alone, which in itself was very nerve-wracking. I was very jittery. I didn't know what to expect. I made sure God was in the passenger seat, and I prayed to him all the way over. I also asked God to protect my stomach because I didn't know when I was going to eat again. After a few tests, I got the word. My husband had suffered an aneurysm in the aorta in the abdomen, which they call the widow maker. Thankfully, while my husband was being tested, my daughter was in town, and we went to the cafeteria to get something to eat. There was so much food there, but nothing. There was nothing that would have changed any of the circumstances. I did order a salad with a protein, and I also ordered a cup of cream of spinach soup. And as soon as I tasted the soup, which I don't normally eat, and I don't know why, my mind wasn't thinking straight. I could taste the flour. And I said to my daughter, I can't eat this. It has flour in it. She said, Mom, I don't know what you're thinking. I said, Daddy's in surgery. I'm not really thinking right now. And this is a man who never got colds. I mean, he was never sick. So that was May 2014. Okay, fast forward to June 1st, 2015. My husband was involved in a car accident. He was okay. The car was totaled. And shortly before this, and at the time I was babysitting for my 15-month-old granddaughter, I picked up a car seat because, in my mind, we were going to go out and about in our car. Okay? Wrong. The car is down. So I had this wonderful stroller with a hood. So God had me out walking, where at my top weight, which was 280, I couldn't walk 3 blocks. I would be taking my granddaughter for a walk or on my own from 2 to 5 miles without dropping dead. This was like, how does this happen? How does this happen? I'm 70 years young, and it's like, how does this happen? I couldn't do these things when I was in my 50s and 60s. Okay, we come to 2016. We make it all the way up to Christmas morning. Oh, finally, I could breathe a sigh of relief. Wrong. My husband starts complaining about back injuries or back pains. I thought, well, we better get this checked out. We take him to the ER at a local hospital to find out the stent they put in his abdomen in 2014 was leaking. So the original hospital that did the surgery could not do it because they weren't staffed. It was Christmas morning. So we had to take him down to one of the hospitals in Center City, Philadelphia. And thank you, God. Once again, he recovered. He did very well. He took the time off that he needed, and he was okay. Okay, so that's 2016. So now we come to 2017. It's like, well, he comes home early one afternoon. And I looked out the window, and it was like, are you okay? And he said, I was laid off. The company just folded. I felt like the air was sucked out of my body. And sure enough, he was laid off. So he's able to collect unemployment. But at 69 years old, he's got to start all over again looking for a job because he still wants to work for a few years. And I have to say, I thank God through all these trials, all these tribulations, not one time did the food enter into this equation. Because the food would never change anything. The food would just complicate things. And I turned to God. I turned to God for all things. And God allows me to work through my program daily. And I work with others, which I need to do to hold my serenity and my sanity. And God is doing for me what I could never do for myself. I have to tell you, I absolutely thank God, OA, Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, for saving my life and allowing me to honor them with doing service for others. Now, we're not destitute. And thank you, God, my husband is going out there and he's putting in applications. Leigh, if you can time me, I don't have a clock in front of me, please. So what happens this morning? All of a sudden our dog is barking and my husband comes upstairs with an envelope. And we open the envelope, it's addressed to my husband and I, and it's only signed from someone that cares. And in the envelope was $200. And I'm like, oh my, I mean, I'm still shaking because it's such a humbling experience. And my husband knows my program. My husband's a normal eater. My daughter's a normal eater. I'm the one with the crazy brain. And he said, look how you're affecting people's lives. And this is just mind-boggling because I'm the one that does for others, to help others, because I would be so selfish and so lax if I didn't go give back what was so generously given to me. I thought of myself as being a woman over 300 pounds in a wheelchair. That is not the case today. I've released 100 pounds, and I'm out walking. And this is like, how does this happen? When I thought for sure I would be over the 300 pounds, because this is where I was going. Food was everything for me. Food was my God. And thankfully, that's not the case today. Thank you, God. I become abstinent July 25th of 2011. And this program is just miraculous. And if there are any newcomers on the line, and if you think you're beyond help, give this program a chance. It really does work. And the beautiful part of it is just for today. So just for today, all I have to do is just think about, you know, being of service to others, which I'm doing now, and thank you, God. I feel very honored to do this. And staying close to God. And everything else will fall into place. I absolutely bristle when I hear in the program that abstinence is the most important thing in their lives. And that's okay, because that's their journey. Everyone has a different journey. My journey is to stay close to God and work my program every day. I don't know if that's how close I am to the 15 minutes, but I'd like to end there. And thank you so much for allowing me to serve. I am here, and with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Naomi B., for sharing this morning. All panelists' contact information will be offered at the conclusion of this recording, so stay tuned for that. The share ID for this recording is 10640. That's 10,640. And we'll now transition to a question-answer segment. If you have a question for any of the panelists, you can press star 1 to unmute. Identify yourself by first name and first letter of your last name, please.
Good morning. I'm Kathy, and can you tell me what time the telephone numbers will be given out?
Yes, at the conclusion of this recording, approximately 10 a.m. Eastern Time.
Thank you. I pass.
Okay, who has a question for our panelists this morning?
Lori, good morning. This is Charlotte. I'm calling from Minnesota. We're at a convention with about 15
yes.
people in our room.
Sorry. Welcome. Your name again, yes. please. I'm sorry. One moment. Your name?
Charlotte.
Charlotte. Okay, hold on, Charlotte. Let's see who else has a question this morning. I'll come back to you. Anyone else with
Lori
a question?
Lori P.
Lori P.
Kimberly S.
Kimberly S. Anyone else in this grouping? Okay, Charlotte, please include the first letter of your last name and ask your question. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. This is Charlotte D. My question is, this is my first time listening to one of these calls, but how do those of you that are working, you know, a vision for you, how do you incorporate that with local meetings, or do you still go to local meetings, or do you find they complement each other, or I'm just wondering, how does it work for you, or how do you make it work?
This is Katie G. I can address that.
Please go ahead, Katie.
Sure. Well, welcome. So excited to hear you. So a vision for you is just an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. There's no vision for you methodology. We're an Overeaters Anonymous meeting, and we are committed to the studying of the and practicing of the 12 steps and 12 traditions as they're outlined in the big book. When I first came to Vision for You, I was already involved in some meetings that were local, studying the big book. And I know a lot of people who spend some time attending the Vision for You meeting and working with a sponsor and having a spiritual, and then getting to the point where they have a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, so that they can then go on and carry a message of the big book and of recovery. So I think that integrating it into your local meetings can be a great opportunity for all of us to carry the message. And that's definitely something, too, that you can chat with your sponsor so that you have an appropriate balance of learning what we're studying here in the big book. And then, of course, integrating with our local community. That's all.
Thank you, Katie. Any other panelists like to chime in on that?
This is Naomi B. I'd love to.
Go ahead, Naomi.
Thank you. I have the honor of being a moderator on a phone meeting at nighttime, another OA phone meeting at nighttime. And my sponsor questioned me about doing this because it's tied in with relapses. And I said, yes, I really need to do that because I need to carry the message. And my message has depth and weight as far as carrying the big book. And I know for myself, when I went to my first OA meeting, it's like my problems with weight, what do I know about drinking? It's just a matter of substituting. And that book, to me, that book has all the answers in it. And carrying the message, that's what I do. Wherever I'm at, I carry the message because this is the only way I can live. And thank you again, and I pass.
Thank you, Naomi. Thanks, Charlotte, for the question. Lori P., your turn. Star one time.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Lori P., recovered compulsive overeater from New York, and I have a question for Leslie W.
Go ahead.
Okay. Good morning, Leslie W. Thank you so much for your wonderful share. It was very emotional for me. I, too, share that same fear about my children. In fact, my son will be going in for spinal surgery at the end of this month. And so my question for you is, I heard you say that you did a fourth step on your son. Can you share a little bit more about that and that process and how you came to really release your children to God, knowing that you're not their God, and just what that process was like for you.
Yeah, thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to address that, to expand upon that. So the fourth step inventory really was about fear for me, and selfishness. So when I took that fourth step inventory, it looked like this. I'm afraid of my son dying. I'm afraid of being a bad mother. I'm afraid, yada, yada, yada. Selfishness is that I don't want something bad to happen to him because I don't want to have to deal with those repercussions. I don't want it to disrupt my life. And quite frankly, I just can't handle it. You know, that's what it looked like for me. The dishonesty was that I was, you know, assuming things that assuming outcomes that belong to God and not me, when I didn't really know the outcomes. Everything was a question mark. And so the dishonesty was that I was making those assumptions about what would happen to my son, you know, that he was going to be severely impaired because of this head injury, or that maybe he would be paralyzed because of the possible tethered cord. So all of those things were going on in my head. Let's see. So you're going to look at those four things. You're going to look at, you know, dishonesty, fear, selfishness, resentment. So here's another one that you might not know. Resentment is like feeling something over and over and over and over again. It doesn't necessarily mean being angry with someone, although most of the time that is what it means for me. But what happened for me was, as I was going through the inventory process, I had to also acknowledge the resentment that I had over the fact that I was even dealing with this. Like, I didn't want to even deal with this stuff, and I was pissed off about that. And I also kept re-feeling the incident over and over and over and over again by telling my story to friends, neighbors, church members, anybody and everybody who had heard about what happened to my son and wanted to talk about it. I kept reliving it, which only increased that fear in me. And so that was what my inventory looked like. And I will be happy to talk more to you about this offline, because that is a very big question. And I think it should be addressed maybe one-on-one between you and I. So please feel free to call me. My number is 615-974-1290. That's 615-974-1290. And thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lori P., for the question. Kimberly S., your question, please. Star 1 to unmute.
Hi, this is Kimberly S., a recovering compulsive overeater from Ohio, and this question is for Katie G. You said you had a mantra that God is sending me who I need, what I need, and could you complete the rest of that?
Absolutely. It's my favorite. So God is sending me who I need, what I need, when I need, for as long as I need it. So God is sending me who I need, what I need, when I need, for as long as I need it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Kimberly. Who else has a question this morning for one of our panelists? You can do so by pressing star 1 to unmute and identify yourself, please.
Liz T. in Minnesota.
Liz T.
Hi, this is Jackie C.
Jackie C.
One more.
I'm not catching the gentleman. If you could speak up, perhaps.
Can I speak to that last person again? Yeah, my name is Scott. And I've got a question for that last
Scott?
Speaker. Or the right.
Okay. One moment, Scott. Hold on. Hold on 1 minute. Thanks. One moment, please. Anyone else in this grouping?
Cindy H.
Cindy H. All right.
Garrison.
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 Hi, Garrison. Hold on. Okay, let's go with Liz T. followed by Jackie C. Go ahead, Liz.
Good morning, fellow brothers and sisters in recovery. My name is Liz T., recovering in Minnesota, and thank you so much for your shares on the line today. I think it was Craig F. that shared about, and maybe KDG also, about being the actor and the director on the stage. And I guess something I've been struggling with lately is, how do I balance letting God's will come into my life and letting things happen and unfold, and knowing when to step up or speak up and say my truth? Because I have a fear of stepping on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate. I know it's a very broad question, but if anything comes up for you that has helped you with that, what I'm focusing on the most lately is getting quiet with my higher power in my step 11 and doing fear inventories in my step 10, and also trying to stay busy in my 12th step with, you know, with the fellowship and being, you know, trying to be of service to my higher power, myself and my fellows. Is there anything coming up for any of you that, that has been helpful in your spiritual journey? I hope that question makes sense.
Perfect. Thank you, Liz. Who would like to respond?
This is Craig F.
Thank you, Craig.
You know, one of the things that, thank you for that question. It's, I think, a good one. One of the things that I think makes a big difference to me is that understanding the difference between controlling things for a result and saying what I need to say. You know, you talked about speaking up for your truth, but we can speak up and say what we need to say to take care of ourselves, to establish a boundary. And that, but that doesn't mean that people are going to hear you or listen to you or respect the boundary you've established. So there's a difference. The difference is expecting the result of control. And you know, I've had to do a lot of 10th step work myself, and you know, it always starts with where's my selfishness, and it always starts with I expect people to do things the way I want them to do them, and that's control. And you know, but that doesn't mean that I can't say this is the boundary. This is where I would appreciate you don't step over my boundary, and I just can't expect that people are gonna behave the way I want them to behave. So that's the fine line difference for me. I hope that makes sense. Thanks. I'll pass.
Thank you,
Liz T. For the question, Jackie C. Your turn.
May I add something, Leah? This is Katie.
Hi, this is Jackie.
Of course.
Oh, sorry,
of course.
Never mind.
Hold on. I'm sorry, Jackie. See, one moment, please. Go ahead, Katie.
Just a 30-second. I totally echo what Craig said. And the other thing that's helped me learn to speak is when I do the 10-step inventory is being, you know, softened and being open to God and learning it's not what I say, it's how I say it. And exactly like Craig said about the expectations, like if I say this, it doesn't mean that somebody is going to do what I'm asking them to do. But learning to speak my truth has really been about really inventorying and talking with other recovered women and learning to differentiate the truth from the false. Like, can we say this? Is this appropriate? How do I say it? And how do I say it? Because tone of voice and my attitudes towards other people has been really life-changing, learning about how that changes how I am heard. And with that, I pass.
Thanks very much, Liz T., again, for your question. Jackie C., your turn.
Hi, this is Jackie C., recovering in California. I had a question for Leslie. First, I just want to say thanks to everyone. Leslie, can you say more about your experience with your belief changing about God not punishing you anymore? Thanks. Or ever, not, if that makes sense.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. The question is, can I expand upon my belief and how that changed of God not punishing me anymore? Is that right?
Yes.
Thank
yes,
you.
That's right.
All right. Yep. So that has been a long process for me. You know, when you grow up, I'll just share a little bit about how I grew up. I grew up in South Georgia. I'm a Southern girl, as you can probably tell from my accent. But, you know, Southern Baptist, was raised Southern Baptist in a Christian home. And if there was ever a message talked about God being good and God being loving and kind, for some reason I never heard that. All I heard were big, fat, sweaty preachers getting up on the pulpit and talking about how I'm going to go to hell if I don't accept Jesus into my life. So let me tell you, that was the vision of God that I had in my head, was this punishing God who was just waiting to squash me like a bug. And I felt a constant gun on my back to perform and to be a certain way and to earn God's love. And if I stepped out of line, then hell would come raining down, right? So that's the old belief, and that's how what had happened to me and how I had perceived God to be. When I came into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, you know, people talked about it being a spiritual program and not a religious one. I didn't understand that. See, I thought spirituality and religion were the same thing. And for me, that process of believing that God is not a punishing God anymore, it really came down to my life experiences, which there's many, many, many more experiences that I have had other than this one that I just mentioned on the line. I'm happy to share that with you and with anybody else who wants to hear it. There's a verse that I held on to, and it's there is no fear in love. Instead, perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment, and the one who fears has not been yet made perfected in love, has not yet been perfected in love. So I knew that I still had a ways to go, you know, because I still felt that my God was a punishing God, not a loving God. And so the way that I came to believe that God is a loving God and not a punishing one was through the 12-step process. And I worked those steps. It was a step two issue for me. The God who relieved me of my obsession from food could not be a punishing God. I had to learn through talking with my fellows, through listening to this line, and through working those steps out of the big book, how to discard those old beliefs. And I asked God, I said the set-aside prayer. Set-aside prayer. That's what you want to hang on to. Reading We Agnostics really helped me to get rid of that old punishing idea. So those are just a few of the things that I did. And honestly, just getting down on my knees and asking God to change me. Change my belief in Him to what He would have it to be. Right? Who is God? God, reveal yourself to me. Who really? Who are you really? Not what the pastors say you are, not what my mom and dad say you are, not what my husband says you are, not what anybody else says you are, but who are you, God? Reveal yourself to me. And God did that. And He did it for me, and He'll do it for you. Call me. We'll talk about it. Thanks.
Thank you, Jackie C., for your question. Scott, star 1 to unmute, and please include the first letter of your last name as well.
Yeah, my name is Scott, and I have a question for him also at the convention. And my question is what you're talking about. I have circumstance that's been going on in my life. I can't really do anything about it, and that creates I do have a lot of fear about it. I can't just sell my house, can't leave the house. We've got gunshots going on every day, and they're real close to the house. And I get very fearful over that, and consequently, I eat. And so once I leave today, this convention, everything's been fine here. I know I'm going right back into that consequence that I can't change. Do you have any suggestions?
Thank you, Scott, for the question. Panelists?
Hi, this is Naomi B. I'd like to take a shot at this, please.
Naomi B., go ahead.
Thank you. It resonates in my head as a step one.
Yes, please.
We are powerless over food or powerless over our lives, and our lives are unmanageable. I mean, it just, that's it. We have to humble ourselves. We have to just... Physically, because of surgery and stuff, I cannot get down on my knees, but I spiritually do it, and I just lay myself open to my higher power, and it's like, you're in charge. I can't handle it. It's so above what I could handle, and there's always circumstances coming up around. We had a situation in our neighborhood last night, and I did pray on it. I did ask the people if they were, you know, kind of quiet themselves down a little bit. But life does not stop just because of these circumstances. And God is sought if we go after him. And it really does work. And I hope that helped. And I pass.
Thank you, Naomi. Katie, you wanted to respond as well?
Yeah, sure. Really quick, Scott. You know, I certainly hope you're doing everything to take care of yourself, and I can't pretend I know what it's like to live where you are. I can say that what I was taught, and this was really hard for me to understand, is that circumstances are not making me eat. The things that I grew up with, the terrors that I faced, they didn't force me to eat. And I learned that because there are people who are living in circumstances who that are similar or better or worse than mine, and they're not eating addictively today. And I'm not saying that it's easy, but I had to get to a point with a guide, with a sponsor, which I really suggest you do, where I recognize that I have a disease, and the disease, my allergy, the body, and the obsession of the mind was what was driving me to eat and not the circumstances. And that this line is filled with hundreds of men and women who are living through remarkable circumstances, and they're not eating, and they're doing so happily despite whatever's going on in their life. So there's a lot of help and a lot of support, and I encourage you to call us and ask for help.
Thank you, Scott, for the question. Cindy H., your turn, star one to unmute, please. Cindy, star one to unmute.
Good morning. This is Cindy H. Can you hear me?
I hear you well.
Okay, thank you. I just want to say, first of all, that I've been seeking recovery for many years. Originally went to the regular OA meetings on two different occasions through my life and found a lot of what I've heard on the recordings here about not really seeing recovery for myself or others. But and I just wanted to thank everyone in this group because they have given me hope. And I have two questions. First one is, if any of you experienced extreme obsession in your mind where you always doubt yourself and you overanalyze absolutely everything, did this change through the step work that you did? And or do you think do you think that that's something that you have to battle continually? And my second question is, how do you maintain this spiritual change or personality change in your life on a daily basis? What does that look like for you? Thank you.
Thank you for the question, Cindy. Panelists, who would like to respond?
Hi, this is
Leslie.
Craig.
I hear Leslie and Craig. Go right ahead. Leslie.
Okay. The question, have I ever experienced obsession of the mind in regards to doubting myself? I believe that was your question. Hell yes. All the time. And I experience not only that obsession, but other obsessions as well. I can obsess over a lot of things. And you know, mostly when I'm obsessing, it's about self. It's about how it will affect me. And when I find myself doing that about a particular person or situation, I must grab hold to someone else who can teach me and walk me through that inventory process. I must. And if I'm recovered and I find myself doing that, as a recovered person, I still find myself obsessing over certain people, circumstances, and things. And so, you know, when that happens, that's when I must go back and I must dive into that inventory process. I cannot do that by myself. I must have someone to help me and guide me, because at that point, once that obsession locks on, my perspective is skewed. I'm not really going to be able to understand and see myself in a true manner. I'm telling myself a lot of untruths at that point. So that is what I would say about that. And as far as maintaining that spiritual condition, you know, there's a lot of talk about maintenance steps or growth steps or what have you. You know, I'll never reach, and you'll hear this on the Vision Line a lot, and I'll end with this. I'll never rise above the level of being a human being. And so that means that every day, what that looks like for me is an inventory process, is a mini inventory process. And so when I'm disturbed, I will do my step 10. And if you don't know how to do a step 10, that is something that a sponsor and other fellows on this line can help you learn how to do. That is something that another person had to teach me how to do, because I did not know how to do them properly. Step 11, you know, my nightly review and my prayer and meditation time, having a little bit of time to connect with my higher power each day. And then step 12 is service. If I'm not doing all of those three things, then I am not maintaining my spiritual condition. So that I pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie. Craig F., you would like to respond as well, please.
I would. Thank you. Great question. The question is kind of centers on exactly what I was trying to say was the change in my life. You know, I suffer from that obsession with self-doubt, which is simply an obsession with self. You know, I obsessed over getting ready for this talk this morning. You know, am I good enough? Am I going to say the right thing? Am I going to say what I need to say? Am I going to make any difference for anybody? I mean, that self-doubt could eat me alive, but that, it's still just obsession with self. I just have to be honest about who I am and where I'm at. And when I do that, then it's okay. It's just okay. One of my favorite little slogans is compare and despair. You know, if I sit around and I spend my time comparing myself with those around me and their recovery, then I'm going to go into despair, and that's just setting myself up for relapse. And then in terms of the maintenance of my spiritual condition, the instructions are so clear about that in the Big Book. One of the things that I did for myself with this last Big Book that I got was I got 5 different colors of highlighters, and I highlighted things differently. I highlighted the musts as one color, the thesis statements as a color, and then the necessary spiritual experiences, the necessity of a spiritual experience or spiritual growth as a color, and the prayers one color, and the promises a color. so that I could find them easily. But that orange that I use for the necessity of a spiritual experience or how to enlarge my spiritual life, that orange dominates the book as I flip through it. Mostly what you see when you flip is the orange, and the instructions are clear. You know, I enlarge my spiritual life by self-sacrifice, working with others. I enlarge my spiritual life through surrender. And then in this, the instructions in steps 10 and 11 and 12 are very clear. You know, we pray in the morning, we pray through the day, we pray and meditate, and we do the daily review. And the steps, the instructions in 10 are clear. And when I adopt those disciplines, I don't necessarily have to feel them in my heart to adopt the disciplines. I just need to be deliberate about it. And when I'm deliberate about that, about those disciplines, the growth comes, and it comes as a gift. You know, we're an undisciplined lot, the end of Into Action says. But God will discipline us, and so it's a gift. And that discipline is what leads to the spiritual growth, in my humble opinion. With that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Craig. Thank you, Cindy H., for the questions. Our final question for today comes from Garrison M. Press star 1 to unmute, please, Garrison.
Hi, this is Garrison, compulsive overeater in Baltimore, Maryland, Garrison M. And my question is, so I'm working my step 4, so in between, I guess, column 3 and 4, where I need to pray, the acceptance prayer column, I'm having a hard time, or, you know, just wondering about when I come to the principles about myself that are from column 1, things like, you know, I don't get back to people, I'm disorganized, I don't stay in touch with people, I'm not smart. So I've got all these kind of principles about myself that you know, I'm upset about. And so I just don't know, you know, and I have how the prayer would look like, what the prayer would look like for those principles about myself that I put down in column 1. So that's my question. How do I pray around that before I move on to column 4?
Thank you, Garrison. Any panelists like to respond to that, please? Which panelist would like to respond?
This is Katie G.
Thank you, Katie.
I can say, hi, Garrison, I'm completely unfamiliar with that instruction. I do know about praying during my 4th step, but I don't know that particular instruction. But I will say for me, prayer is always an important way to communicate with God, and I know that that's not the answer you're looking for, but I would maybe go back and chat with your sponsor, maybe get some more information from that, and ask God. I mean, the best news about prayer is there's no wrong way to pray. It's just chatting with God, right? And he or she or higher power will answer as they see fit. Hope that helps.
Thank you very much, Katie. Anyone else want to share their experience on this?
Can I answer that? This is Leslie.
Of course.
I echo what Katie said a little bit, just because I don't really understand that direction either. That I never did that praying over that 4th column necessarily. I think the only prayer that's necessary to pray is, God, grant me the willingness to see these things, to be able to recognize it and to acknowledge it, you know, because you haven't gotten to the point yet where you're not yet at 6 and 7, where God's going to actually begin to remove those defects of character from you. And the 4th that fourth column is just, you know, that last column is just looking at your part, looking at what you did to set the ball or didn't do to set the ball rolling in that regard. And it's it's the acknowledgement of that. So, you know, I really wouldn't spend too much time thinking about the right prayers to say. I would just do it. That's my take on it.
Thanks, Leslie. And thank you, Garrison M., for the question. Thanks to all our panelists this morning, Katie G., Craig F., Leslie W., and Naomi B., for sharing your testimony as to the rearrangement and personality change, a psychic change that's possible as a result of these 12 steps. Thank you very much. We'll close now from page 164 from the chapter 11 entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.